It was on the back porch. There was a rock on it to keep the individual pages from blowing all over the little dooryard in the light breeze. The small thump he heard had been the man putting the rock on the manuscript. Mort stood in the doorway, hands in the pockets of his khaki pants, looking at it. He knew that craziness wasn't catching, except maybe in cases of prolonged exposure, he supposed, but he still didn't want to touch the goddamn thing. He supposed he would have to, though. He didn't know just how long he would be here. A day, a week, a month, and a year all looked equally possible at this point, but he couldn't just let the fucking thing sit there. Greg Carstairs, his caretaker, would be down early this afternoon to give him an estimate on how much it would cost to reshingle the house, for one thing, and Greg would wonder what it was. Worse, he would probably assume it was Mort's, and that would entail more explanation than the damn thing was worth. He stood there until the sound of his visitor's engine had merged into the low, slow hum of the afternoon. And then he went out on the porch, walking carefully in his bare feet. The porch had needed painting for at least a year now, and the dry wood was prickly with potential splinters, and tossed the rock into the juniper-choked gully to the left of the porch. He picked up the little sheaf of pages and looked down at it. The top one was a title page. It read, "Secret Window, Secret Garden," by John Shooter. Mort felt a moment's relief in spite of himself. He had never heard of John Shooter, and he had never read or written a short story called "Secret Window, Secret Garden" in his life. He tossed the manuscript in the kitchen wastebasket on his way by, went back to the couch in the living room, lay down again, and was asleep in 5 minutes. He dreamed of Amy. He slept a great lot, and he dreamed of Amy a great lot these days. And waking up to the sound of his own hoarse shouts no longer surprised him much. He supposed it would pass. The next morning, he was sitting in front of his word processor in the small nook off the living room, which had always served as his study when they were down here. The word processor was on, but Mort was looking out the window at the lake. Two motorboats were out there, cutting broad white wakes in the blue water. He had thought they were fishermen at first, but they never slowed down, just cut back and forth across each other's bows in big loops. Kids, he decided, just kids playing games. They weren't doing anything very interesting, but then neither was he. He hadn't written anything worth a damn since he had left Amy. He sat in front of the word processor every day from 9 to 11, just as he had every day for the last 3 years. And for about 1,000 years before that, he had spent those 2 hours sitting in front of an old Royal office model. But for all the good he was doing with it, he might as well have traded it in on a motorboat and gone out grab-assing with the kids on the lake. Today he had written the following lines of deathless prose during his 2 hour stint. 4 days after George had confirmed to his own satisfaction that his wife was cheating on him, he confronted her. "I have to talk to you, Abby," he said. It was no good. It was too close to real life to be good. It had never been so hot when it came to real life. Maybe that was part of the problem. He turned off the word processor, realizing just a second after he'd flicked the switch that he'd forgotten to save the document. Well, that was all right. Maybe it had even been the critic in his subconscious telling him the document wasn't worth saving. Mrs. Gavin had apparently finished upstairs. The drone of the Electrolux had finally ceased. She came in every Tuesday to clean, and she had been shocked into a silence very unlike her when Mort had told her 2 Tuesdays ago that he and Amy were quits. He suspected that she had liked Amy a good deal more than she had liked him. But she was still coming, and Mort supposed that was something. He got up and went out into the living room just as Mrs. Gavin came down the main staircase. She was holding the vacuum cleaner hose and dragging the small tubular machine after her. It came down in a series of thumps, looking like a small mechanical dog. "If I tried to pull a vacuum cleaner downstairs that way, I'd smack it into one of my ankles and then roll all the way to the bottom," Mort thought. "How does she get it to do that, I wonder?" "Hi there, Mrs. G," he said, and crossed the living room toward the kitchen door. He wanted a Coke. Writing shit always made him thirsty. "Hello, Mr. Rainey." He had tried to get her to call him Mort, but she wouldn't. She wouldn't even call him Morton. Mrs. Gavin was a woman of her principles, but her principles had never kept her from calling his wife Amy. Maybe I should tell her I caught Amy in bed with another man at one of Derry's finer motels, Mort thought as he pushed through the swing door. She might go back to calling her Mrs. Rainey again, at the very least. This was an ugly and mean-spirited thought, the kind of thinking he suspected was at the root of his writing problems. But he didn't seem to be able to help it. Perhaps it would also pass, like the dreams. For some reason, this idea made him think of a bumper sticker he'd seen once in the back of a very old VW Beetle. "Constipated. Cannot pass," the sticker had read. As the kitchen door swung back, Mrs. Gavin called, "I found one of your stories in the trash, Mr. Rainey. I thought you might want it, so I put it on the counter." "Okay," he said, having no idea what she might be talking about. He was not in the habit of tossing bad manuscripts or frags in the kitchen trash. When he produced a stinker, and lately he had produced more than his share, it went either directly to data heaven or into the circular file to the right of his word processing station. The man with the lined face and round black Quaker hat never even entered his mind. He opened the refrigerator door, moved two small Tupperware dishes filled with nameless leftovers, discovered a bottle of Pepsi, and opened it as he nudged the fridge door closed with his hip. As he went to toss the cap in the trash, he saw the manuscript. Its title page was spotted with something that looked like orange juice, but otherwise it was all right, sitting on the counter by the Silex. Then he remembered. John Shooter, right. Charter member of the Crazy Folks, Mississippi branch. He took a drink of Pepsi, then picked up the manuscript. He put the title page on the bottom and saw this at the head of the first page. John Shooter, General Delivery, Delacorte, Mississippi. 30 pages, approximately 7,500 words, selling first serial rights, North America. Secret Window, Secret Garden, by John Shooter. The manuscript had been typed on a good grade of bond paper, but the machine must have been a sad case. An old office model, from the look, and not very well maintained. Most of the letters were as crooked as an old man's teeth. He read the first sentence, then the second, then the third, and for a few moments, clear thought ceased. Todd Downey thought that a woman who would steal your love when your love was really all you had was not much of a woman. He therefore decided to kill her. He would do it in the deep corner formed where the house and the barn came together at an extreme angle. He would do it where his wife kept her garden. "Oh, shit," Mort said, and put the manuscript back down. His arm struck the Pepsi bottle. It overturned, foaming and fizzing across the counter and running down the cabinet facings. "Oh, shit," he yelled. Mrs. Gavin came in a hurry, surveyed the situation, and said, "Oh, that's nothing. I thought from the sound that maybe you'd cut your own throat." "Move a little now, can't you, Mr. Rainey?" He moved, and the first thing she did was to pick the sheaf of manuscript up off the counter and thrust it back into his hands. It was still okay. The soda had run the other way. He had once been a man with a fairly good sense of humor. He had always thought so anyway. But as he looked down at the little pile of paper in his hands, the best he could manage was a sour sense of irony. "It's like the cat in the nursery rhyme," he thought, "the one that kept coming back." "If you're trying to wreck that," Mrs. Gavin said, nodding at the manuscript as she got a dish rag from under the sink, "you're on the right track." "It's not mine," he said. But it was funny, wasn't it? Yesterday, when he had almost reached out and taken the script from the man who had brought it to him, he'd thought about what an accommodating beast a man was. Apparently that urge to accommodate stretched in all directions, because the first thing he'd felt when he read those three sentences was guilt. And wasn't that just what Shooter, if that was really his name, had wanted him to feel? Of course it was. "You stole my story," he'd said. And weren't thieves supposed to feel guilty? "Pardon me, Mr. Rainey," Mrs. Gavin said, holding up the dish rag. He stepped aside so she could get at the spill. It's not mine," he repeated, insisted really. "Oh," she said, wiping up the spill on the counter and then stepping to the sink to wring out the cloth. "I thought it was." "It says John Shooter," he said, putting the title page back on top and turning it toward her. "See?" Mrs. Gavin favored the title page with the shortest glance politeness would allow and then began wiping the cabinet faces. Thought it was one of them, whatchamacallums, she said. Pseudonames, or nims, whatever the word is for pen names. I don't use one, he said. I never have. This time she favored him with a brief glance, country shrewd and slightly amused, before getting down on her knees to wipe up the puddle of Pepsi on the floor. Don't suppose you'd tell me if you did, she said. I'm sorry about the spill, he said, edging toward the door. My job, she said shortly. She didn't look up again. Mort took the hint and left. He stood in the living room for a moment, looking at the abandoned vacuum cleaner in the middle of the rug. In his head, he heard the man with the lined face saying patiently, "This is between you and me. We don't need any outsiders, Mr. Rainey. It is strictly between you and me." Mort thought of that face, recalled it carefully to a mind which was trained to recall faces and actions, and thought, it wasn't just a momentary aberration or a bizarre way to meet an author he may or may not consider famous. He will be back. He suddenly headed back into his study, rolling the manuscript into a tube as he went.